now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slam of pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam show.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. It is the Pancakes and Power Slam show. I am Chris Featherstone, hosting on behalf of Crave Wrestling. Like we do every week, we have a lot of fun. Number is 347-884-8452 to call in. Tweet at Crave Wrestling. Chat line is open right now for your thoughts of Raw, SmackDown, Night of Champions, ROH, TNA. Just going to have a lot of fun like we do every week. Friend of the week this week is the worst tag team champions of the 1990s. So be sure to tweet or call in or go in the chat room for that as well. Chat room question up right now. Who introduced Ming to the WCW and what was his initial role? Once again, who introduced Ming to the WCW and what was his initial role? This week's news. Got a few pieces of information here. Tammy Lynn Sitch, better known as Sunny in the WWE, rested this past week three consecutive nights for domestic violence, well, strangulation, violating a protective order, and disorderly conduct. So latest is that she went to rehab for those things, and hopefully she works that out and gets better. She's only 39 years old, so it's kind of rough when you see someone like that. It was such a famed personality in the WWE for quite some time, one of the original divas as far as the model-esque look, and it's kind of tough to see that. Just got inducted in the Hall of Fame recently. So best wishes for Tammy Lynn Sitch's recovery from a mental standpoint. WWE avoiding signing anyone recently affiliated with TNA while in court. Names being thrown out that are looking to sign. Ric Flair, Alex Shelley, and D-Von, even Jesse Neal was a name that was thrown out there as far as possibly being signed, at least teasing that he is going to get signed or maybe get signed. So as of now, they figured the best and safest route while they're in court is just to avoid and refrain from signing any talent while the while the process, the legal process is taking place. Randy Orton flips off a fan at Night of Champions, getting into a heated argument with him. As of now, there's no there's no type of reprimanding for him. We know that he'll be out filming 12 Rounds Reloaded, and he'll probably be gone for a month or so. Great Khali returning to action soon. He had surgery to remove a pituitary gland. Really, really happy that his recovery is going well, and we wish for a speedy recovery. And the recovery has been going well as far as full recovery for Khali, and hope to see him in the ring soon. Definitely not the most popular wrestler, but at the same time, he is a necessary body in the WWE. Just just as far as a big man is concerned. So that's good to know that his recovery is going really well. John Cena gets surgery. He gets injured and gets surgery. Right now, it's reported that he'll be out for 4 to 6 weeks. So we'll see. We'll see as far as how that plays into the Hell in the Cell booking. It'll be really interesting to see as far as a new person or a new wrestler or superstar that can be incorporated when we go through Raw and through the pay-per-view and everything. Maybe people can call in or log in the chat room or tweet at Crave Wrestling. What person would like to see, or people they would like to see be a replacement for John Cena to feud with CM Punk? And then finally, Lawler returns to Memphis after his unfortunate occurrence last week after his heart attack. And really good to know that his recovery is going well. And we saw him on Raw and how looks like everything's going well. So I'm really happy to know that process is going really well. I knew he was going to fight it out strong. Like I said, he still wrestles in the indies at 62 years old, so I was very confident that his recovery was going to go really well. He actually has a interview next week on Raw, so that's really good to see. Very, very good to see. All right, that's this week's news. Let's go to Night of Champions. Very interesting pay-per-view. 347-884-8452 is the number to call. Once again, 347-884-8452 is the number to call. Right now, the question on the chat room is, who introduced Ming to the WCW, and what was his initial role? Who introduced Ming to the WCW? What was his initial role? Tonight of Champions, pre-show battle royal. Had participants were Brodus Clay, Primo Nepico, Justin Gabriel, Tensai, Tyson Kidd, Michael McGillicuddy, Zack Ryder, Darren Young, and Titus O'Neil, Jinder Mahal, Drew McIntyre, Heath Slater, Santino Marella, and a returning Ted DiBiase. Zack Ryder won the match. I wasn't a big fan of it. I really wanted to see someone new be affiliated in the U.S. title feud going on right now. I mean, as far as the hunt, there's not really anybody in the title hunt right now. It was Santino, but he just keeps losing matches against Cesaro. He just really keeps losing matches, period. I really don't know. I mean, he's not anything more. He's not really a person that you would consider winning a series of matches, but at the same time, just making him a glorified jobber is just not the way to go as well. And then I wrote an article on Bleacher Report about my feelings of the WWE dropping the ball when it comes to Ted DiBiase's return. After being away from an injury, for some reason they just decided to throw him in the Battle Royal. Not only that, he's one of the first people who are eliminated. So that's horrible. makes it even worse. I mean, at least he could have had a Cody Rhodes, Zack Ryder type of resilience showing in the Battle Royal. Maybe it was 16 people. Maybe be one of the final four or three. Maybe I just didn't understand the point of having him be one of the first people eliminated after return like that. They are in desperate need of top baby faces, and I just don't understand why they would make a decision like that as far as having Ted DiBiase return in that nature and then be one of the first people eliminated. I really believe they dropped the ball on that. So I really hope that they redeem themselves as far as the use of Ted DiBiase, and hopefully they have him have some type of mid-card push down the line very soon. Then we go into the actual pay-per-view. Opener was Miz versus Mysterio versus Cody Rhodes versus Sin Cara four-way match for the Intercontinental title. Miz wins the match. This was predictable to me. It was a good match. It was a good quality match for an opener. I was actually anticipating, this is one of my most anticipated matches, just because I knew that I knew that this was going to be a high impact match, and just the Miz Cara, I called him. He kind of bumps into Cody Rhodes, gives him the finisher, his finisher. So I don't know. I really don't understand what they're going to do with the Intercontinental title as of then. But at the same time, we kind of got a little bit of a teaser from Raw. So there are some reports that is going on as well. We'll get to that when we talk about Raw. 347-884-8452. Chat room, who introduced Ming to WCW and what was his initial role? Call in, tweet at Crave Wrestling. Let's go on to primetime players. Eve and Caitlin backstage segment. Then we go to some type of Nancy Kerrigan, Tonya Harding type of part of the show. Caitlin gets hurt, and that kind of set the tone for Eve being the replacement. It's interesting that they had it that way, but writing was basically on the wall as far as Eve having some type of affiliation with this match. I was thinking a triple threat or a special referee role, but just to have Caitlin out of it entirely kind of defeated the purpose for the Battle Royal. But at the same time, there's some reports saying that the finish was botched, but it just didn't look botched to me at all, because it seemed like Eve specifically made it a purpose to be eliminated. Especially looking at that finish, it didn't seem botched to me at all. But at the same time, who knows what the real story is. But at the end of the day, we saw what happened at Night of Champions. We'll get to that a little later. R-Truth and Kofi Kingston against Kane and Daniel Bryan. Kane and Daniel Bryan wins, becomes new tag team champions. So I believe that was pretty predictable as well. They're just really striking while the iron is hot as far as the Kane and Daniel Bryan tandem. And I think it's a good idea. I definitely think it's something that they're really doing a great job, as far as booking, like I've said before, and I think it's definitely a good idea to have them as tag team champions. And just when you thought that it just couldn't get any funnier, we'll talk about that later as far as how funny it continues to be. So good idea to have them too as tag team champions. Then next we got back to the match. There are many funny parts of the match, of course, but the hug it out, and the fans cheering it, and the hug it out. I didn't know that it would resonate that much, but it definitely has resonated that much, and There's still not necessarily a team named for the two, but I would imagine that there's going to be some type of team name coming up soon, or at least an unofficial name. So we will see how that goes. Next, we had Booker signing Eve as a replacement, which I definitely knew that that was going to happen. And Antonio Cesaro defeating Zack Ryder, pretty predictable. I don't know. To me, it just seems like it was a way of having the pre-show be occupied in some type of way. I mean, I just don't understand. It was pretty predictable. Like I said, I wrote an article on Bleacher Report about Ted DiBiase, and to me, it seems like it would have made a lot more sense for DiBiase or even Tyson Kidd to win and to start a United States title feud from the result of the Battle Royal and then the subsequent match between the winner and Antonio Cesaro. Cesaro, I mean, it was a decent match, but it was predictable, though. I mean, Zack Ryder, you know, he'll reach, you know, sometimes he'll reach some type of spike in his career, but it's still relatively flatline. This was the spike of his career. I mean, as far as his tenure as of late, but I don't really see anything much going on with this. Him as U.S. champ, it's just not a good call right now. There's other people that are ahead of him. Like I said, Tyson Kidd and Ted DiBiase would be my two initial choices. And like I said before, the previous show, Christian would definitely be up there as well. But we saw him, but we'll get to that later. But as far as him returning in action, they're looking after Bound for Glory because of his dealings with TNA as of now. So I really hope they do something with the U.S. title because to me, I don't think Cesaro is ready for it yet. People are still trying to understand his gimmick. He's still growing as far as being a legit heel. I like him. Like I said, I liked him when he was Claudio Castagnoli in the Indies and specifically ROH, but I don't think I don't think he's ready yet. But they've got the title on him, and I just really hope that I really hope that they have some legitimate talent that could feud with him and not someone like Zack Ryder. I just don't think that's a good idea. Randy Orton defeats Dolph Ziggler. To me, this was predictable as well. But at the same time, I didn't think it was a bad idea. Like I said before, and like I've written in my articles at Bleacher Report, I don't think that Dolph Ziggler needs to go on some type of winning streak. Last year's winner of the Money in the Bank was Daniel Bryan, and we saw, you know, what happened with Daniel Bryan. His from July of last year when he won the Money in the Bank till December, his win-loss record was not something to be proud about. He even lost cleanly to Wade Barrett at SummerSlam of 2011. And Wade Barrett wasn't even a top heel or anywhere close to it. Wade Barrett at the time, his win-loss record wasn't the best either, and he wasn't on any type of rise as a heel, but he beat Daniel Bryan cleanly. So, but he won in December. He won the World Heavyweight Championship, you know, and haven't looked back since. So, I see this with Dolph Ziggler. I don't think that Dolph Ziggler needs to be on some type of streak, a winning streak, or have some type of big push and start beating everybody. He wasn't really winning too many matches. I believe he's got a this last 9 pay-per-views, I believe he's like 2-7 or something like that. Some stat I saw. I think that's it. But, you know, just because he won the Money in the Bank match doesn't mean that he, you know, has some type of resurgence in his career and he just wins a bunch of matches. Just be the same Dolph Ziggler, not win too many matches, but at the same time have a type of drive when he wins the World Heavyweight Championship, and then that's when you start winning the matches. So I'm okay with it. And it really would have been hard for me to see, for me to feel that the WWE was going to have Randy Orton lose clean anyways. I know he's going to be out filming for 12 rounds, but this is kind of a semi-send-off while he's gone, because for some reason they just treat Randy Orton like they're, you know, he's the WWE's baby. And I guess, relatively speaking, he just about is. I mean, he's a third generation superstar, and both of the elder Ortons had a stint in the WWE or WWWF. So, you know, I guess it makes sense. But you know, I'm not too big of the fan of the favoritism. Because the whole flip-off episode at Night of Champions, you know, if that would have been someone lower on the totem pole, I mean, you can throw anybody's name out there, you know, Yoshitatsu or someone like that, you know, they definitely would have been nearly immediately reprimanded for it. So I'm not a big fan of that perspective, but, you know, the good part of it is there was a crazy RKO at the end. That was a really, really good way to end the match. And you know, we'll see where Dolph Ziggler goes from here, which is one of the questions that I posed. I have another article that I wrote, 5 puzzling questions left after Night of Champions, and that was one of the questions. Where does Dolph Ziggler go from here? Just because, you know, I don't see him, you know, being placed in the World Heavyweight Championship feud with Sheamus, because he is the Money in the Bank winner, which is kind of a caveat of having the Money in the Bank briefcase. It's hard to book those people. You have to be in some type of random feud. You can be in a mid-card title feud, possibly, which I think would be a good idea. However, both the mid-card champions are heels right now. But if there was a mid-card face champion, I can see Dolph Ziggler kind of winning that just to have a title for a while. That, to me, I think that would be a good idea for next year's Money in the Bank winner. Or winners, at least one of them, maybe winning a mid-card title after they win the Money in the Bank briefcase, because they kind of have to be placed in random feuds. Because if you put them, I would say either that option or having them win the respective world championship without, like, maybe being placed in a triple threat match or a fatal four-way match, by winning a number one contenders match or kind of getting placed in a feud that way. And then, you know, people would think that they automatically have to utilize their or cash in their briefcase. Maybe they win the championship, lose it a few months later, and then kind of book a, you know, maybe a month or two later, or get into the new champion get into a feud with someone else, and then maybe a few months later they cash in the briefcase and say, I never, you know, lost it. Something like that. You know, I guess if anybody's listening, I've got all the booking ideas in the world. But, you know, the point is, it's hard to book someone legitimately who has a briefcase. So we've seen it, you know, throughout the years, usually being placed in random feuds. And it looks like that's really the only option for Dolph Ziggler now. So we'll see where he goes from here. Eve defeats Layla. This match was just, I mean, this match did absolutely nothing for me. Just the Divas division itself is just horrible. It's horrible, and I made mention of this in one of my articles, that it's good that Layla does not have the title anymore. Because I think the very fact that when she came back at Extreme Rules, so many people was thinking that it, you know, was going to be karma. So, I think that's that still kind of left a blow on Eve as far as her popularity. She is yet to get over as a face. So I don't know if a heel turn is the best idea for her right now. I don't see Eve turning face anytime soon. Caitlyn's not ready yet. So there's not Natalya's heel, Beth Phoenix's heel. There's not really a legitimate baby face right now. Kelly is out. Tamina Snuka is being spearily utilized. So is Alicia Fox. So they need that baby face that connects with the crowd. Alicia Fox did a decent job. Tamina Snuka was a traditional kind of baby face for the Divas. I really hope that they bring Tamina Snuka back for more of a frequent role. And I really think that she, as a baby face, could make some type of turn to the Divas division, because it has been a bore for quite some time now, and they need to have something happen. There's some reports saying that one of the reasons why Eve won the Divas title was because of her popularity, specifically booming from, well, she's popular in the back. She's well received, and especially the Stars Earned Stripes win that she had. So they decided to place the title on her. I don't like Eve, and people who listen to this show frequently every week know that I'm not an Eve fan, but at the same time, I guess it is the lesser of two evils to have Eve have the title rather than Layla, because Layla is just a bore. Even in commentary, she's a bore, so we'll see where they have, you know, we'll see what baby face they can kind of have to feud against Eve. Maybe there's some type of Booker T finds out that Eve was, you know, the one behind Caitlyn's injury. Maybe they play more on the Nancy Kerrigan angle they have now. I don't know. Something that's bring some type of suspense to the Divas division, because it is desperately needed. Daniel Bryan, Kane, Dr. Shelby, and AJ backstage segment. Just hilarious. I mean, I can't say enough about just the goodness of the writing when it comes to this angle. It's just one of the high points of WWE right now. So kudos to that segment. And Daniel Bryan gets a Gatorade bath, and Kane said he's going to Disneyland. Just absolutely hilarious. So I'm sure we'll see more and more of that in the coming weeks. Alberto Del Rio against Sheamus. beforehand, Booker T comes out and said that Bro Kick is reinstated. Mixed reviews on that. Mixed reviews on that. A lot of people thinking that that was a bad idea. It just kind of messes up. It kind of messed up the whole angle as a whole. Me, on the other hand, and I've seen some people favor the contrary. I favor the contrary as well. I actually wasn't a big. I wasn't a big opponent of that decision. I was actually okay with it because the angle as a whole is incredibly boring to me. It's been going on way too long, and to me, I was actually hoping that it was a Daniel Bryan WrestleMania type of match, and they ended it that way. But we saw a match. The match actually wasn't bad. It was a relatively decent match. Nice pay-per-view gear for Sheamus, and Sheamus wins the match, and that was pretty much expected. I really don't understand why they're having Sheamus be in a feud with Alberto Del Rio for so long, just for Del Rio to lose every match. So I'm not a fan of it. I really hope that they just end it. They cease the feud. We see something different. It has to happen. So Paul Heyman promo, which was good. He cuts solid promos all the time. Does a phenomenal job. Then finally, we saw CM Punk against John Cena. Punk was healing it up so much. Comes out with the Yankees gear, which there's reports that say that it was inspired by Paul Heyman. Makes a lot of sense because he's just a creative genius like that. That definitely was a good way to spark the more heel heat for CM Punk. Holds up the WWE Championship for a long time. Also a good way to garner heel heat. So, yeah, I think that that was good ideas. Heyman's presence just outside, just being a kind of really analyzing the match, making a lot of gestures and expressions. This has a really good feel to it. He's not doing much. He's just really kind of scoping the scene and really just taking mental notes. I think it's a really, really good feel for CM Punk's character. So I'm totally on board. I was skeptical at first as far as Punk's heel turn. His affiliation with Paul Heyman I've always been a supporter of. But his heel turn at this time I was very skeptical of, but I'm totally on board now as far as his affiliation with Paul Heyman. I think it's a great idea. And then Cena's still getting tons of heel hit in Boston. That's just insane. It's his hometown, and you know the hometown pops is just about a lock for everybody, but unless they cut a heel promo on the screen before he gets back on TV, which usually kind of garners heel heat. Like, for instance, if someone goes to Canada and who's a heel, Christian or Chris Jericho, they used to do it all the time. They used to cut promos on the screen to just keep their pops because the Canadian crowd usually favors the Canadians. So, you know, Cena didn't do that. He's a bona fide babyface and still got a ton of heat. So there's even some reports that some anti-John Cena signs were being confiscated. So I don't, you know, I'm not a Cena fan, you know, just because of a number of, well, you know, beforehand it was just a matter of him paying his dues, and I definitely think he's paid his dues now. You know, and then it was a matter of his not knowing how to wrestle, and I think that he's improved. I think that he can put together a good match. I think his athleticism goes a long way for him. So, but now it's just a matter of I think Cena should really just step down, you know, as far as letting another babyface be in the scene. He's, you know, John Cena has been, I believe 2006 was his first World Heavyweight Championship win, if I'm not mistaken. It was WrestleMania 22, if I'm not mistaken. Might have been, because I know the year before he won the U.S. title at WrestleMania against JBL. Then the year after that, he won the world championship. The WWE championship. So it'll come back to my memory. It'll come back to my memory. 2005. Yeah, 2005 was his first first WWE championship. He beat the Big Show at WrestleMania 20 for the United States Championship, and then 21 he defeats JBL for the WWE Championship. So it's been since 2005. So it's been 7 solid years for Cena's reign. That's a run of Hulk Hogan proportion. So, you know, I think it's time for someone else to, you know, step up as far as being the guy when it comes to, like, a top babyface. And there's some reports that Randy Orton desperately wants to turn heel again, and so he won't be the guy. Punk is heel now, so there has to be someone that steps to the plate to be the top babyface. So we shall see. Mysterio's not that guy because he's reaching the end of his career relatively. So his career is more of, you know, on the tail end of it. So we shall see who the next top babyface is. So feel free to tweet at Crave Wrestling, call in 347-884-8452. Chat line is open. Answer is indeed Colonel Rob Parker, and he was the bodyguard for Ming. Colonel Rob Parker, and he was the bodyguard, indeed. That is the answer. And who was Haku's last partner in the WWE is the next question for the chat room. Who was Haku's last partner in the WWE? Let me go on to Raw. Real quick, the finish for the Punk and Cena match, it was a good call. It was the classic Dusty Rhodes finisher, is what I like to call it, or what it's really coined that. Dusty Rhodes finisher is the baby face gets the win. He think he wins, and usually it's in a type of finish like that. Usually like a German suplex when they're both down and they count like that, or a finish similar to that. And I believe Tommy Rogers was the old NWA. ref that's really had a lot to do with reversing the decision when it came to the Dusty Rhodes finish. It's called Dusty Rhodes finish because Dusty Rhodes was a booker. He was one of the head bookers. He was the head booker for NWA for a while, doing the late '80s, and he really came up with popularizing that type of finisher. I believe him and there was a match between him and Ric Flair that ended that way, and just a few other matches that ended in the quote the Dusty Rhodes finish. So the babyface thinks that he wins, and usually the referee. There's a bunch of celebration. The referee takes it away. It would usually involve the title. Not always, but it usually involves the title. Referee takes it away, and then basically the heel either wins by draw or, gets coined the winner, or there's a draw, which still has the heel retain the title. So we saw that at Night of Champions. The Dusty Rhodes finish was intact, and CM Punk retained the title. Although I'm not a big fan of that type of finish, I do think it was a good call to extend this feud, because there's not really anybody, there's not a plan B, and there's going to have to be one, because we'll get to that later as far as more in depth of John Cena and what happened to him recently. But it's going to have to be a plan B, unless they just have him come out and cut promos. But no plan B, so going to extend this feud. I still don't see how Rock could be around December, January, Royal Rumble time, and I don't know, it's still 3 or 4 months left to extend this feud, which, you know, I think it's at its last legs now, but we'll see if there's anybody else to get thrown in there. We'll talk about that later when we get to Raw. So, yeah, I mean, decent Night of Champions pay-per-view altogether. It was above average. I believe I gave it about a 7.5. It did what it needed to do, and wasn't the most exciting pay-per-view, but it served its purpose, so not too many complaints about the pay-per-view as a whole. WWE Raw, CM Punk's music starts and Heyman comes out instead of CM Punk and cuts a promo. Brings out Chad Patton to defend his decision of the match ending of Night of Champions. Shows photo and video to prove that. Cena comes out and actually agrees with the decision, but he asks for a rematch that night. Alberto Del Rio comes out. To me, it was... And he complains about Sheamus, which I don't understand still. AJ comes out and books a match of Cena and Sheamus versus CM Punk and Alberto Del Rio, saying the winner of the match... basically, the purpose of the match was to really kind of scope the number one contender. So, I mean, it was just a weird concept to the match. I just really don't want to see Sheamus and Alberto Del Rio affiliated with each other. It's just horrible. It's absolutely horrible. Cole introduces special guest co-commentators, JBL and JR. Big fan of this. JBL actually commentated Night of Champions as well. He commented how he was a little rusty, and how basically he it was a little tough for him to really get back into the groove, and we saw him on Raw, and it was a big jump from what we saw. I mean, I did hear the rust and notice the rust on Night of Champions. And it was definitely a good commentating team of Cole, JBR, and Jim Ross. So definitely a big fan of that. 347-884-8452. number to call for your Raw, SmackDown, Impact Wrestling thoughts. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for your continual weekly support. Just the support has been really, really strong since we started, and definitely very, very appreciative of that. Crave Wrestling, Pancakes and Power Slam, spread the word, and we will continue to be here for you, and we will continue to air shows every Tuesday, unless something, of course, something happens emergency-wise, or we have special editions, but we are here for you. Tweet at Crave Wrestling for any thoughts. Chat room. Of course, every week it's a lot of fun. Right now, the trivia question is, I guess, a little tougher. Haku's last partner in the WWE. Give chat room a little bit more time to figure that out. Next, we'll go to Mysterio and Sin Cara defeating Primo and Epico. I really like the Mysterio and Sin Cara tag team. I definitely think it's a good way to book both of them, because right now I don't see any type of big rise for Sin Cara or Rey Mysterio. Like I said, I think he's reaching the tail end of his career. And ultimately, it seems like they're just going to set up a Mysterio and Sin Cara match at WrestleMania, which I'm also in favor of. So they defeat Primo and Epico. Then we see a post-match attack and promo from Primetime Players. They're having more of a serious role. And I actually was a bigger fan of the Primetime Players when they were more joking, more just... more of a cocky heel. I don't think that being just uberly serious really would, it would just make it seem corny to me. So I really don't hope that this, I don't hope that this stick. I understand the they feel like they got shafted from their tag team title. I understand the point of the attack, but I really hope that this isn't just a character change altogether. So we'll see where that goes. Eve defeats Beth Phoenix. Poor Beth Phoenix. It just seems to me that she would be dissatisfied with just the decision to lose so much. I mean, there's no way in the world. I mean, I guess this is another extreme rules time. Around the time where I think it was like a week or two prior, the Raw before Extreme Rules, Beth Phoenix just loses to, I think it was Nikki Bella. It was one of the Bella Twins. I don't remember exactly who it was. But loses to one of the Bella Twins, and just a weird loss. They both were heels, and just loses to one of the Bella Twins. Sells an ankle injury that was reported to be kayfabe, and it just seems like ever since Extreme Rules in April, she just really haven't rebounded, and so just really tough for Beth Phoenix. She is the best athletic and most intimidating diva and on the whole roster, but she just loses all the time, so I just really don't like what they're doing with Beth Phoenix right now. Brodus Clay defeats Heath Slater. Typical. Typical Brodus Clay. Really don't understand why they decide to have people, like I think I mentioned this before, they have people come to WWE, be real gimmick heavy, and don't really have a direction, but we'll get to that later as far as, we'll get to that momentarily. As far as one of those people who seems like they are finally getting some type of direction in their career, in their path. But Brodus Clay, there was some Damian Sandow feuding momentarily, which seemingly is over with. And maybe he's the guy to feud with Cesaro. we'll see. But Brodus Clay, if it wasn't for Cameron and Naomi, this guy would totally not be over. I mean, he doesn't get much pops anymore, and people hear his music and it's just, you know, blah now. I like Brodus Clay, but at the same time, this guy needs some direction fast. He's been here since January, you know, and still just nothing much going on for him. So obviously he's getting stale to the crowd, and I would imagine the WWE universe as a whole as well. Miz TV debut, special guest Booker T. For some reason, I thought that they were trying to tease Booker T and The Miz for the Intercontinental title, feuding against each other. Booker T is one of my all-time favorite wrestlers, so I was like, okay, well, maybe they're going to feud, which wouldn't make much sense because Booker T is the GM, but I don't know, maybe like a player-coach type of thing as far as, you know, wrestler-slash-general manager. But I was in favor of it. But when Miz was kind of sabotaging Booker T, he really didn't do much except for introduce the other guests, or the replacement guests, which was Ryback, and he comes out and wrecks the Miz TV set. Ryback, that's what I'm saying as far as someone who finally has a gimmick-heavy person who finally has a direction. Right now, there's talks that Vince McMahon just wants to give Ryback the go-ahead as far as ascending his push. So I'm okay with it. I mean, it seems like we're going to have to see Ryback. For some odd reason, I don't see him. I mean, he still gets Goldberg chants real heavy. The Feed Me More is good, but just the natural chants is still Goldberg. So I don't know if that's necessarily a detriment to his career. I really don't see Ryback as the top face anytime soon. Really, if ever, as far as like the go-to guy as far as a top baby face is concerned. So we shall see. I think the Intercontinental title feud is good for him. I'm okay with it, and I think that at least it gives him some type of direction in his push, and finally he gets the go ahead to have some type of direction. We saw slightly Jack Swagger feuding with him, very, very slightly, and we saw Tyler Rex and Kurt Hawkins feuding with him, which was okay. And of course, most recently, Jinder Mahal, which is okay too. But, you know, all of those people really didn't make much of an impact during that time anyway. So we'll see. We'll see. And Ryback and Miz would be indeed a decent feud, a mid-card feud. CM Punk backstage interview. Then we go to Dolph Ziggler defeating Santino. That is, to me, it seems like every week there's just a random Raw match that really don't make much sense. But at the same time, it's a 3-hour show, so they're gonna have to book a match anyways. I think last week was Alberto Del Rio against Tyson Kidd. It really didn't have a backstory. Well, it didn't have a backstory to it at all, but it was just a random match. I think this was the random match. Santino jobs, that's starting to get very normal. I don't know. It seems like their investment in Santino has diminished. I mean, he has hosted a few, I think maybe at least two Saturday Morning Slam episodes, which is probably a good fit for him. He definitely fits the mold of the Saturday Morning Slam concept, which admittedly is a pretty good show. I mean, it's a half-hour show. It's a G-rated, kid-friendly show, and I think that it very much serves its purpose. There's actually some good numbers as far as the viewership of the show, and I can see why. It's definitely some good statistics they have, and just really kid-friendly, and I think it's a good concept that is probably going to be around for a while. Wade Bear defeats Justin Gabriel. Some Nexus chants, so we'll see where that goes as far as well, of course, it's not going to bring the Nexus back, but as far as them pairing the two against each other anymore, because I would imagine that the WWE was not endorsing any Nexus chants. But it seemed like they would, you know, they would get that anyway, seeing how, you know, they were in the Nexus and the core as well. Just Wade Barrett's return so far has been an absolute flop. And his finisher is horrible. I said that before. I said that last week. Just his finisher is just terrible. I would rather see his waistband than some type of short-armed. They say it's a punch, but it's more like a forearm smash. So Wade Barrett needs to like I said, for all those amazing promos, he needs to do something fast. They need to go ahead and make the decision to put him in a feud with Sheamus quickly. Kane and Daniel Bryan defeats Kofi and R-Truth. We see a post-match hug it out, and more of the I am the tag team champions chants between the two of them, which is another incredibly funny concept between the two, both of them individually chanting, I am the tag team champions. That is just hilarious. So I wonder if they're going to play on that as far as a name, or maybe them competing against each other for the rights to it. That may be the end of the eventual conclusion of the tag team and the angle. Maybe they compete against each other, and somehow someone helps Daniel Bryan win and becomes his tag partner or something of that nature. But as of now, the I am the tag team champions is very, very catchy. I've seen it as comments on my Bleacher Report articles already, so it's very catchy. Randy Orton defeats Tensai again, another random match that was a repeat from SmackDown. Tensai, he's just, I would say useless, but using him as a jobber is useful. But this guy is an absolute flop. Just not much to say about him other than the fact that I think like him and Brodus Clay or him and Ryback or something like that would be a better decision to, instead of having him just job all the time. You know, he needs to go back to Giant Bernard in Japan if he's going to have this type of jobbing. It's just horrible. Even when like I said, when he came back and was so gimmick heavy and had all the markings, Japanese markings and all that, I said, oh no, this is already doomed from the start. So we'll see if the WWE pulls the plug on Tensai and repackages him or just let him go. I never have any, like, ill wishes as far as someone just letting go, because I know that that's their job and, you know, that's their living. But I really hope they repackage Tensai, have him be some type of mercenary or something. It'll be a heck of a lot better than what we're seeing now. Damian Sandow defeats Zack Ryder. Really liked the promo from Damian Sandow before the match as far as enlightening the ignoramuses of the WWE universe. So I think it was pretty funny, and I'm a dictionary guy too, And when he was using the words, I was using them as sentences as well. I was like, okay, well, maybe I am as intelligent as Damian Sandow. Maybe I am more elite than the intellectual, the ignoramuses of the WWE universe. But, you know, I kid. I think it's definitely a good thing to still hear Damian Sandow on the mic. He's one of the people that I wish as well have some type of direction going on with his career, because honestly, he's not ascending to me. He's kind of relatively high still, but he's kind of flatlining to me. There's not much of a climb to his career. So I really hope that we see something with Sandow instead of just defeating just random people. And he got new gear. I'm glad that we got out of the Rick Martel pink tights and different color knee pads and different color boots. I'm very happy that that gear is gone. But for some reason, it seemed like the gear was a size too small. So they really need to work on Damian Sandow's gear altogether. So we'll see if that continues to progress as far as his look as a whole. Because, you know, I think Bret Hart made mention before as far as like someone's look, attire, and things of that really plays a big part into their wrestling career, which I very, very much agree with. And then finally, Cena and Sheamus defeat CM Punk and Alberto Del Rio. Punk's foot was on the rope. Ref didn't see it. Punk screams at referee up the ramp, and show ends. Like I said, Cena's out for a month and a half, so we shall see if there's someone else that they're deciding to replace Cena. So I don't know. I hope they don't bring the Big Show back to be that person. That would have to make him a babyface, which many people feel like him as a heel is better. I prefer a face Big Show because I think a heel Big Show just his role is just to be a big guy to eventually job, at least, you know, sometime, at least as a singles wrestler, he wins matches as a face more. They'll just make him some type of dominant person just to, you know, lose the angle when he's a heel. I mean, of course, he had a good heel run as a tag team wrestler with both Chris Jericho and The Miz, but yeah, I wrote on the Bleacher Report that I believe that his role right now at this point of career should be an enforcer for CM Punk and to align himself with Punk and Heyman as more of an enforcer role. I think that would be a good idea, kind of like what he did with John Laurinaitis with John Cena, but more of a stable type of thing, playing more of the enforcer role. So we'll see where they're going to do as far as implementing John Cena. 4 to 6 weeks is enough time to have him compete at the Night of Champions pay-per-view. So maybe we just see a bunch of promos. So I don't know. Honestly, I think that he should have some time off, but he's such a commodity to the WWE that seems like they just put all their stock in them constantly. So, like I said, just a new baby face. We need it, we need it, we need it. So, on to SmackDown. Alberto Del Rio, Ricardo Rodriguez, and David Otunga in-ring segment. Interviewed Christian via satellite. Good to see him back in some type of capacity. Believes bro kick should be banned, but still does it in a more of a babyface type of way. Daniel Bryan comes out and believes it should be banned as well. He asks for a rematch tonight against Sheamus, a WrestleMania rematch. Sheamus appears on stage and cuts a promo. He rips off Otunga's neck brace. Sin Cara defeated Miz. backstage argument between Miz, Cody Rhodes, Rey Mysterio, and Sin Cara, who just pointed. They eventually get booked into the Fatal 4-Way match. Backstage segment with Dr. Shelby, Kane, and Daniel Bryan. Very, very funny innuendos about the stress balls they were using. Kane defeats Kofi Kingston. Dr. Shelby comes out and stands on stage, and Kane hugs Kofi. Backstage interview with Randy Orton defeats Tensai. Vicky Guerrero cuts a promo on stage and tries to swerve Orton just to be Vicky Guerrero tried to swerve Orton to be attacked by Ziggler, but it didn't work. Antonio Cesaro in-ring promo interrupted by Tyson Kidd, who gets thrown out of the ring. Then Brodus Clay gains the upper hand and splashes him. Clay and Kidd celebrates afterwards. Wade Bear promo on stage. Caitlyn defeated Beth Phoenix, another Beth Phoenix loss, which is horrible. And eventually, Sheamus defeats Daniel Bryan. Tweet at Crave Wrestling. Looks like the chat room question is difficult. The answer to that question is Rikishi. Haku's last partner in the WWE had a little return in the early 2000s. Rikishi was the tag team partner of Haku. They were feuding against the Brothers of Destruction. I believe 2001 was the year for that. Then we go on to Impact Wrestling. Austin Aries in ring promo talks aces and eights, calls out Jeff Hardy. Interrupted by Bully Ray. Had a no surrender rematch between Hardy and Ray. Zema Ion defeats Sanjay Dutt. Mentioned best wishes for Jerry Lawler, which is a very classy move there. Good match between the two. Post-match attack on Sanjay Dutt by Zema Ion. Hogan books singles matches with Daniels and Kazarian. Books a match with Chavo Guerrero against Daniels and AJ Styles against Kazarian. And basically, if whoever wins against Daniels or Kazarian becomes the number one, their tag team becomes the number one contenders for the tag team championships, which was a pretty innovative and creative decision. I liked it. Like I said before, I think that TNA has done a good job with just making innovative ideas. Definitely in favor of the ideas that has came to pass over the past year. Backstage was Angle and AJ Styles. Wes Briscoe talks to Angle. Wes Briscoe, he actually looks like one of the Aces and Eights guys. One of the guys who wears the half mask and just the hair just kind of comes out. Seems like Wes Briscoe, I like Wes Briscoe. He had some time in the WWE developmental territory, and of course he's son of the he's a part of the legendary Briscoe family, so he brings that heritage with him. So, you know, I would imagine he's not the front runner of the Aces and Eights, but I do like him to be a part, and he just kind of pops up every now and then. They really don't do much with him, but he just kind of pops up. Yeah, that's a good idea too. So maybe even we'll see a Wes Briscoe and Kurt Angle match or something to that nature. Ultimately, Bound for Glory is a few weeks away, so they really need to. I mean, this is their WrestleMania, you know, pay per view, WrestleMania caliber pay per view. This is the WrestleMania pay per view for TNA. So they really need to do a lot better job developing. I think a lot of this should have started at No Surrender, like I said before, but we'll see how they use these next couple of weeks to build up their biggest pay-per-view of the year. Bobby Roode in-ring promo, interrupted by James Storm. They go at it. James Storm calls out Bobby Roode eventually backstage for the open fight night. AJ Styles defeats Kazarian. Him and Angle become number one contenders. Backstage with Hogan's and Joseph Park. I like Joseph Park's continual affiliation with Impact Wrestling. I also see backstage with Jeff Hardy and Bully Ray. Hogan in-ring promo interrupted by Aces and Eights on the Jumbotron. We'll get to the part as far as someone who I believe is part of the Aces and Eights. Chavo Guerrero defeats Christopher Daniels. Also, his team, him and Hernandez, becomes number one contenders. Tyr in ring calls out Miss Tessmacher, officially presents the Knockouts title to her, and eventually tags her. I don't know if it's a full-fledged heel turn, but seems like it. I like the teacher versus student feud. I think it's okay. I don't know if Tyr had to necessarily become heel, but I guess they need a big heel to feud against Miss Tessmacher. It's not like they have Gail Kim and Madison Rain, but I guess Tyr is the person that they choose to be the official person that feuds with Miss Tessmacher. It has a backstory to it, so I can understand it. Then there's a conference talking about the Aces and Eights, and I liked it too, because they were kind of like saying, we don't, you know, it might be someone in here, you know. I believe it was Pritchard, Hogan, Al Snow, and D'Lo. And I made a comment on an article before that is seen, and this was weeks ago, but just the mannerisms and the body structure, it seems like the ringleader is D'Lo. And when they kind of threw that out there, it kind of solidified my view on that. Like I said, I don't think D'Lo is the mastermind behind it. I don't think they're going to lead, you know, to – it would kind of be a failure if – you know, not saying that D'Lo is just, you know, some failure of a wrestler as far as his career is concerned, but it seemed like the payoff would be a lot better than D'Lo being the guy. But at the same time, I think that him being the ringleader for Jeff Jarrett would be a good idea. You know, like I said, I'm not trying to spoil anything. These are just suggestions. I don't know who's behind it ultimately. But I think that since D'Lo is like a backstage agent guy, he kind of has the inside scoops for Jeff Jarrett. I think that would be a nice little twist. Nice little swerve to the angle. So, I don't know, writing's on the wall, especially with the conference and them kind of throwing out the suspicious, you know, comments like that. Seems like D'Lo just may be one of the inside, one of the insiders as far as the Aces and Eights are concerned, which is a good idea. Then finally we saw Jeff Hardy defeating Bully Ray and keeps the title shot. That was the stipulation behind that. Finally, as far as the week in wrestling is concerned, we'll go to a Ring of Honor. Charlie Haas defeats Michael Elgin. We saw interference by Roderick Strong. He was outside as well, sitting down, and had some type of, and he was really affiliated with the in the match just about the whole time. Briscoe defeats Steve Corino and Jimmy Jacobs. Just a solid tag team match. It wasn't any stipulation behind it, but it was a good tag team match between the two. And then finally, there was edited footage from the Kevin Steen and Eddie Kingston recent bout. And I tell you what, there's one spot on there that was crazy. I've never seen it as long as I've been watching wrestling all my life. I've never seen someone powerbomb someone on the opposite side of a bridged table. And I think that was pretty innovative, but I would imagine that was very, very painful. So kudos to Eddie Kingston for taking that spot. That was like I said, I'm sure that was incredibly painful. Finally, the flavor of the week. Thank you so much for joining. Support at Crave Wrestling for Twitter. Facebook is Crave Wrestling. Go and like Crave Wrestling. Usually post Bleach Report articles, latest news, trivia, all that's on there. Like Crave Wrestling on Facebook. And any flavor of the week suggestions, email them to cravewrestling@gmail.com if you want to give to the call, support Crave Wrestling. Also a PayPal account at Crave Wrestling if for those who want to give as far as support as far as giving, which is always appreciated. Finally, we'll go to the flavor of the week. Worst tag team champions of the 1990s. I'll actually go chronologically. There are six total tag teams that I feel that is the worst tag teams of the worst tag team champions of the 1990s. We'll start off with January 10th of 1994. 1-2-3 Kid and Marty Jannetty defeat the Quebecers. So really odd tag team. really odd tag team of 1-2-3 Kid and Marty Jannetty. Just a very underdog tag team. As a kid, I wasn't too opposed to them, but in hindsight, wasn't that really, I mean, there wasn't very much of a longevity to the team. More of kind of like two underdogs that won the tag team titles. And it really didn't make much sense in the long run because they only kept the titles for a week. So, and then we really didn't see much of them pairing any time after that, maybe a time or two, if that. But it just kind of threw the titles on them, I guess, to get it off of the Quebecers, just a change of pace, just maybe to refresh the Quebecers. I'm not sure. But at the end of the day, they only had the title for a week. Another team that defeated the Quebecers in 1994, they only had it for 2 days, was Mabel Lemieux, Man on the Mission. They won on March the 29th of 1994. They beat the Quebecers. Man on the Mission. Back in the day, as a kid, I saw the importance of Man on the Mission as far as being a good face tag team. But in hindsight, man, the team was just not good. Mo was horrible. And I wasn't even a big fan of Mo initially. I know that it just seems like his shape was just awful. He wasn't even really a good wrestler. Mabel really took the brunt of just about everything. He was just really the saving grace of the tag team because he was a really big guy, as we saw throughout the course of his career. He stayed a very large shape. But he was agile for his size, though, and he kept his agility, too, throughout his career with just different repackaging, the Love Machine, the Ministry of Darkness, when he became Viscera, and eventually his last stint was Big Daddy V and managed by Matt Stryker in ECW, which was a really good repackaging of him as a character. So he kept his agility, and he showed it then too. Yeah, 2 day run in 1994 as tag team champions, and that's it. I mean, you know, that's all we really got from Man on a Mission. So definitely go, and their gear was horrible as well. So Man on a Mission, in hindsight, was not a good tag team. It was one of the worst tag team champions of the 1990s. Unfortunately, you know, Sean Waltman as the 1-2-3 Kid was a good character. Definitely, I remember him even in the USWA, even before then, when he was the Lightning Kid and the Kamikaze Kid, and before he became the 1-2-3 Kid. He won, it was another pairing, him and Bob Holly was they defeated Bam Bam Bigelow and Tatanka in a tournament final January 22nd of 1995, and they kept the title for a astonishing one day. So, yeah, it was really odd pairing, another underdog type of pairing, and they really didn't go far. Headbangers, they won the title on September 7th of 1997, defeating the Godwins, LOD, British Bulldog, and Owen Hart in a four-way match. Kept the title for 28 days, but to me, the Headbangers was just really... they really was just a gimmicky tag team. To me, they just wasn't tag team champion quality. I mean, I guess they were around a while and they saw fit to put the straps on them for less than a month, but it just seems like it was more of a sympathy run than anything. Because, I mean, their talent wasn't bad. Mosh and Thrasher as talent was not that bad, but just the Headbangers, it was just too gimmicky to me. And they weren't, to me, they weren't the tag team ever. They weren't ever the tag team of the tag team division. So I definitely, you know, I would say out of the six, they're probably the lowest one. They're probably like five or six down. But, you know, as far as the tag team champions of the 1990s, I definitely placed them into one of the worst choices that was made by the WWE. This might be argued, but I definitely placed the Godwins in that as well. Like I said, they're probably five or six because the Godwins as a tag team was not too bad. I think... Their heel stint, their second run, I believe, was was their heel stint. They won their first one against the Body Donnas on May 19th of 1996 and kept it for 7 days, and they won it again a little over a year later, about close to a year and a half later, October 5th of 1997. Only kept that run for 2 days. They defeated the Headbangers. Like I said, the team itself wasn't too bad, but as far as tag team champions, they had two reigns for a total of 9 days, so that definitely was not, the WWE didn't have enough confidence for them to keep the titles more than 9 days on two reigns, so I would definitely place them as one of the worst tag team champions of the 1990s. Not necessarily tag teams per se, but tag team champions because of the two reigns of 9 days total. Henry Godwin, I was consistently a fan of Henry Godwin. Phineas, not so much. He was really sloppy to me. I remember when they were in the WCW and they were Tex Slashinger and Shanghai Pierce. That's a team name for you for the traditional fans, for the long-standing old-school wrestling fans. I don't know if y'all remember that, but they were under masks. And Tex Slashinger and Shanghai Pierce. So they were teaming before... the WWE, but you know, and then when Phineas came, he was just it's really sloppy to me. Even when he was Midian, he was just a sloppy wrestler to me. So he fit the role of the Godwins, but he was just a sloppy wrestler, and so them as a tag team champions, just wasn't that good. Then lastly, Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie. They won on March the 29th of 1998 by defeating the New Age Outlaws in the dumpster match. Once again, similar to 1-2-3 Kid and Bob Holly, they kept it for a overwhelming, whopping 1 day. They actually had to confiscate the titles because was something going on as far as they wanted, and then it was something about they put the Doge Outlaws in the wrong dumpster or something to that nature, and then they had to basically they had to give the tag team titles up because of that, and basically lost them. So yeah, you know, Cactus Jack, Mick Foley, and Terry Funk as wrestlers, as a tag team. They tag team before, you know, as far as overseas and things like that. Mick Foley looks at Terry Funk as one of his role models as far as wrestling career is concerned, one of his inspirations. But at the same time, the gimmick tag team of Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie, horrible. The stocking on Terry Funk with the chainsaw, just a little over the top for me. It was just a little too much for me. And then, you know, just looking at Terry Funk having to relegate himself to a Chainsaw Charlie gimmick, knowing that everybody knew that there was Terry Funk. So, and I kind of think they played on that too. Like, people knew it was Terry Funk, but he did the whole stocking and the chainsaw thing. That was just a little over the top to me. Kind of one day reign, so that pretty much shows you the stock that they had within the team itself, other than some type of weird gimmick heavy tag team. So, thank you so much for listening. Great show as always. Thank you so much for your support. Your support, all of the listeners, to spread the word. I mean, you really give Crave Wrestling the inspiration to keep going. So we give the supporters, the listeners, the people who spread the word about Crave Wrestling, we give you the credit. Thank you so much for those who read my articles on Bleach Report. You know, just the number is very humbling as far as the people who the number of reads that I've gotten so far within the 5 months that I've written articles for the Bleach Report. And so honored to be a feature columnist there, and thank you so much for your support. 347-884-8452 is the number to put in your back pocket for next week's show. Usually the pay-per-view shows are a little more extensive than the non-pay-per-view shows, so we'll go back to our newly revised format as far as a little less time next week. But regardless, you know, it was a little lengthy from the beginning, which is typical for a show of this caliber. So thank you so much for your listening. Thank you so much for your continual support. We'll be here next week at 11 p.m. on Tuesday. So thank you so much for your support once again. Follow Crave Wrestling, at Crave Wrestling on Twitter. Like Crave Wrestling on Facebook. Check out my articles on Bleach Report. Until then, God bless and enjoy your week of wrestling. Goodbye.